solo adventure awaits you.
This is Solo Travel Talk. Your solo travel advisor is Astrid Clements.
Welcome to Solo Travel Talk, and fellow travelers, does Astrid have some information for you? I'm producer Catherine. This is a two-parter all about safety for the solo traveler. In the next two shows, Astrid is going to give you so much insight into safety practices and considerations if you are traveling alone. Our hope is that this candid, info-packed set of shows will give you the confidence to feel safe, secure, and overcome the obstacles that safety concerns might pose. Let's get to Astrid, and we open with Astrid sharing her thoughts about safety concerns being a reason people don't go solo. Here's Astrid.
It's the number one. Absolutely. I hear it all the time. People that ask me about my different trips or why I travel solo or whatever, they're always like, well, you know, you're not scared to death? And is it really safe? That's why I think this particular podcast is a great podcast. There obviously are many places that I wouldn't go to at this point, but there are a lot of places that are wonderful to visit. And if you use, you know, your common sense and you use some of the recommended solo traveler safety tips that I go by and I travel by, I think that you should be good to go.
That actually brings up a great point. How much of this conversation about safety is a case of doing specific things versus just demonstrating common sense?
Well, common sense is the foundation. First of all, you have to really be smart. Don't take chances. You know, if anything doesn't feel right or look right or there's just something there that's telling you, don't experience it. Don't do it. You know, it's something that we're all built in with, and if we listen to that little voice sometimes, that's going to keep us safe. So you should be even more in tune with that when you travel solo. But also, here again, there are things that you should do when you're traveling solo that are basically the do's and don'ts of solo travel in terms of things that will help keep you safe.
So let's get into it. I think that probably the number one, when we're talking about personal safety, the number one thing on people's mind might be terrorism. I'm guessing terrorism is on the mind of a lot of travelers, whether they're solo or not.
Oh yes. Terrorism is the elephant in the room that now is loose. And it is the number one fear that is out there, especially for U.S. travelers. And it's a tragedy, because this is the only phenomenon, I think, that has really come to be a serious concern in the last 15, 20 years. Prior to that, you'd have certain kind of left-wing cells in certain areas that were kind of acting up, but it wasn't what you have now, these random things that can happen anywhere where there are a lot of people in so many places in the world, that it's made traveling, whether you're with a group or, you know, with a friend or your spouse or solo, more difficult. So with that in mind, you have to think about a lot of different things and to decide where you want to go. Because where you want to go is one of the absolute basics of whether your solo trip will encounter too much danger or it will make you feel uncomfortable. And basically, you should have gone somewhere else because it was much more laid back, etc.
Well, that's a good segue. Destination selection. How much does safety play into where you choose to travel?
Oh, everything. I do not go to anywhere that I consider that it would be unsafe. Everybody who decides that they're going to take a trip, they need, especially out of the United States, American citizens, but people from all over the world can go to the U.S. State Department travel site on the website. This is a wonderful place to start to determine if you want to go somewhere. If you go online and you go to the U.S. State Department travel section, you will see that all of their travel alerts and all of their travel warnings about particular countries or particular areas in countries. And basically, if the place where you want to go has a travel warning or alert, just don't go there. It doesn't make any sense. I always start by going to the U.S. State Department travel section to see if where I'm going has a travel alert or a warning. And these things change all the time. One place might be safe at one period of time and not safe at another. Egypt is an example. I went to Egypt at the beginning of the year for, I actually took a cruise down the Nile. And it did not have a travel warning or an alert, which I was so amazed. Then when I came home, it was on the website. That's where I start to determine whether I want to go to a place. Then secondly, there's a lot of really good information now on the internet. If you Google and you do your research, Travel and Leisure, they do a lot of studies on safety and actually solo travel safety, because solo travel is becoming such a trend. They have a very good study that they recently did on safety and travel. And what they did is they compiled a list of the safest countries or destinations to go to. And how they compiled this list is they looked at the countries that were statistically the safest, and then also countries that were the happiest, places where people like foreigners, places where people are basically happy. So they combined these two metrics. They used the Global Peace Index as well as the Happy Planet Index, and they combined all of those metrics and they came up with this list. So I'm going to quickly go through this list. New Zealand, number one, safest and happiest. Then you have Norway, Switzerland, Costa Rica, Austria, Vietnam, Chile, Japan, Sweden, Indonesia, Germany, Argentina, Canada, Finland, Laos, Netherlands, Ireland, Iceland, and the United Kingdom. So these are what Travel and Leisure, in this order, have come up with. These countries are the safest destinations based on crime rates and based on happiness. So I thought that was a good list to share.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Now, they also did one, best destination for solo women travelers, which I thought was also very good. They did it basically by cities. Barcelona, Seattle, Munich, Dubrovnik, Austin, Texas, Salzburg, Taipei, Copenhagen, Melbourne, Stockholm, London, Reykjavik, Montreal, Bali, and they also just said now Cuba. They didn't say a place or whatever. But I want to put my own little spin on where I think it's very, where I have felt exceedingly safe and comfortable. I have to say Vienna, Austria was great. Venice, Italy, wonderful. Lisbon, Singapore, Hong Kong, I felt very safe. Prague, Nashville, Sedona, well, all over Hawaii. And I added two cities. I've seen them on many lists. Sometimes I think yes, sometimes I think no. But Berlin, Germany, I've always felt safe there. Now, I do speak German, so that's a little bit different, but it's on a lot of lists. But it wasn't on some of the major lists, as well as New York City. It's amazing how comfortable and safe I feel in New York. Now, don't take the subway. And I think that's one of the reasons, because the subway in New York, for some reason, I have never really become comfortable with. So, the most safe places basically in the world are Northern Europe, and really most of Europe except for the big cities, you know, in the big cities can be vulnerable. It's mostly with the terrorism. And then also the petty crime with the pickpocketing and that kind of thing, the money thefts, the, you know, backpacks and stuff like that. But it's not really, it's amazing. The United States didn't make it on any of these lists. So that's something for you to think about. You're worried about traveling to other countries, but the United States and their statistics don't even get them on these safe lists.
Wow.
Yes. Now, certain cities are okay, obviously, just like certain cities in some countries that are considered unsafe, or some areas are safe, but other areas are not. Key things that I believe that make somewhere safe, and I always look at this and think about this in when I'm deciding really whether I want to go to Portugal or whether I want to go to Paris or whether I want to go to Berlin versus the Riviera or whatever. First and foremost, law enforcement should be sophisticated. And when I say that, they should have a lot of security systems in place, and a lot of them that you don't even see, you know, with the technology, with the undercover. I mean, in Singapore, it's so safe. And one of the things that I noticed after a while, and somebody also shared it with me, they have a lot of plainclothes law enforcement that are on the streets. And Singapore, they have a lot of do's and don'ts in terms of littering, chewing gum, you know, not showing affection in public. There are a lot of things. So these undercover law enforcement personnel, they're always watching that. And, you know, they know when tourists are doing it, and they'll give them a warning or if it's too bad, blah, blah, blah. But when you go to places like this, there's very little crime there. That's great for the solo traveler. Secondly, is it a walkable place? Can you walk a lot and there are not areas that are dangerous? And this is key. I think that's one of the key things that I always look to about any place where I travel. Can I walk a lot? Because I love to walk. I love to go in the shops, walk to the museums, walk down by, say, a major river where the cafes are, where, you know.
It's a really a nice way to experience a place.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. So that's important. And then if I have to walk, you know, what are the transportation systems like? Are the subways good or not? Like, I talked about the New York subway I don't like. But in London, I take the tube all the time. Singapore has fabulous mass transit. Tokyo, I mean, you know, there's great mass transit all over the world. And then there's some that I'm not as comfortable with. So it just depends. With the transportation aspect, if you have to take mass transit, you know, you need to be able to walk to those stations from your hotel easily. You don't want a station that's too far away, so, you know, you'll have to take a cab then, okay? Then also the place needs to have kind of a laid-back vibe, you know, the people, a friendly culture. And there are lots of places like that. People don't care. You know, I think of Amsterdam and the Dutch. I mean, they're just so laid back. I mean, I know they're more liberal than a lot of places, but they're really just, it's okay, you know. And that's important. You know, when people are too, like, they don't like maybe the way you're talking or something about you and you're a foreigner, you can kind of sense all that.
Well, just a little less accepting.
Yes, yes, yes. And then another thing where English is prevalent, especially for Americans or English-speaking people, that's a much safer destination. And then if it's not, or is there a lot of English translation in the menus, in the mass transit? Do people speak enough English to where, you know, if you had to ask somebody, a waiter or somebody, they could process it. So that's important. And, you know, and if you're traveling to countries that don't speak English and there's not a lot of translation, like Russia and China, you need to get you a private guide. You know, you need to hire somebody to help you if you're not with a group, because I can tell you, there's no way to get around in Shanghai or Beijing. Now, Hong Kong is not bad, but if you get into other places in China, then, I mean, you need a lot of structure to how you get from point A to point B, and just a lot of different things. So the language is important. Then also, easy for the solo traveler to blend in. The more you can blend in somewhere, it's better. It's better. So those are kind of the things that I look at if a place where I think is really safe. Now, that's a lot to ask for. So you can, you know, it's not always all those things, but there's some of those things that are basic. All right, since I've told you the safe places, I want to share with you the most dangerous places.
Wow, okay. I'm going to hold on to my hat here.
Because I think that's very important.
And just a contrast. It'll be an interesting contrast.
Yes. Well, Travel and Leisure, here again, they say the most dangerous places are, and they say don't even think about going here. I mean, granted, some photojournalists have to go in and some governmental officials, but otherwise, don't think about it and don't go. 12 of the countries are in Africa and 7 are in the Middle East, which is very sad because there's so many wonderful things in those areas. And but they, you know, they're way too dangerous for people to go in. The countries are Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan, North Korea, Yemen, Iran, Sudan, Zimbabwe, Georgia, Lebanon, which I was surprised, but they say Lebanon, Algeria, Uzbekistan, Saudi Arabia, and Somalia. Don't go there. For women solo travelers, these are the countries that you can experience more either harassment in certain ways, and these are also countries that they say, pick somewhere else. India, Colombia, Brazil, Kenya, Venezuela, Turkey, Mexico, Egypt, Morocco, and Thailand. Now, this is from Travel and Leisure, some of their things that they put out. I'll say that, but I'll also say that there's certain places within these countries that I consider are okay. Now, you have to take more precaution with your transportation, with your logistics, and use more common sense in general. But Mexico, there's some places in Mexico like San Miguel de Allende. It's very, very safe. It's just a fabulous tourist destination. Lots of expats live there, etc. So not all of Mexico. And, you know, there's certain things if you go to Mexico you don't do. You don't drive at night. You don't go out at night by yourself. You just don't do that. So, you know, if you want to do some things that, you know, require being out at night, don't go to Mexico. You know, San Miguel could be different because it's such a small enclave and it's so international there and lots of tourism there. Egypt was on the list. Now, you know, Egypt goes off and on of the U.S. State Department, no travel or warnings or whatever. I did go to Egypt at the beginning of this year. There were not any alerts and warnings. I was very surprised there weren't. My husband didn't really want me to go, but I had always wanted to see the pyramids. I'd always wanted to go down the Nile and go and see those royal tombs and just everything that I had learned about when I was in school. I just was always just so fascinated by Egyptology. Well, I decided the only way that I could do that solo, that I would feel comfortable, would be to go on a river cruise. And I've been on the Uniworld cruises before. I do like Uniworld, so I chose a Uniworld river cruise. And I can tell you, I did not feel unsafe one time during the whole 12-day tour and cruise. We were in Cairo. Now, there were a lot of safety features involved. I must say that. When I was picked up at the airport, I had a driver and a guide. And the driver, I didn't realize it at the time, he was armed. Now, that's real safety. But they don't show you all of that. I mean, when you're traveling, like, say, to Egypt, you don't see all these guns. But tourist safety in Egypt is like one of the top three things that is so important to Egypt, because tourism is their largest industry.
I was going to say, it's essential to their economy, so they've got to protect it.
And all of these treasures in the world are here. I mean, so there's an extreme amount of safety. Then once we got to the Four Seasons, they had a dog go under the car all around. You know, they checked your luggage before it went into the hotel. You went through the screeners, and they checked your purse and everything. And I'm telling you, that hotel was very, very well guarded, okay? So that, you know, everything was guarded. From when we were on the bus, we had a police escort in front and back, and that this kind of thing. It wasn't like, you know, here comes somebody that, you know, we should be worried about or whatever, some dignitary. But it was always there, and always there on the boat and around the boat. We did not feel uncomfortable at all. So what I'm saying is, you have to know that before you go to a place like Egypt. But my experience was, it was a fabulous trip. In fact, this trip to Egypt was one of my top three trips I have ever, destinations I've ever been to in the world. Right now, I'm pretty sure there is a warning, and I would say don't go. But there was no warnings when I went or alerts. I chose this really good company. My experience with them, I felt like they were just on top of our comfort and our safety every second we were in Egypt. So, you know, there's certain ways you can go into some countries that have issues that you can feel safe.
I think your story is a great illustration of just how fast things can change. Things can be shifting really radically because of a political situation. And what a great example of how the planning played into you feeling confident. There was a lot of planning in place from the vendors you used, from all those that made this such a beneficial experience and made it such a great experience.
Exactly. I want to cite one more example. I also went to Marrakesh, which Morocco is a Muslim country. And a lot of times people feel, especially Westerners feel, I don't want to go to a Muslim country. There's so many Muslim countries where if you use the right practices and you don't seem to be something that they feel like they want to target or aggravate or whatever. I have every Muslim country, I must say, that I've ever been to, and I have not been to a lot. I've loved the people. I felt very safe, and I would go back. I'll never forget the first time I went to Dubai, which was 15 years ago or more. I was invited there by a business group, to come and look at some real estate projects. And so I was asking the gentleman who had invited me, is it really safe for me? Because here again, my husband said, absolutely, you cannot go there. Oh, Astrid, you know, and I was so comfortable with this group. I said, you have to tell me, will I be unsafe? Because, you know, I don't even want to consider it if this is good, you know, if this is bad. And he said, absolutely not. He said, let me tell you something. And here again with all this safety, these safety systems. He said, when you go to Dubai, he said, you could walk down the street with $1 million cash in your purse at 12 o'clock midnight, and nobody is going to do anything to you. He said, unless you dress provocatively or you do something that causes somebody to want to do something to you? He said, because there are so many cameras, and there's so much undercover, different types of security systems that are in place, and people know that. The citizens know that. Plus their religion. You know, they're not going to do anything that they're going to get in serious trouble. Now, if you put yourself in a vulnerable position, then, I mean, there are people who have ill intention, and that can and will happen. So back to the Morocco real quick. I wanted to go to Marrakesh so bad, so I decided I was going to go. I picked a fabulous Riyadh that, if you go on my blog, you can read all about it. It's the Dar Arwian. It's just fabulous. It's a little bit outside of the city, but it is, well, it was a movie set for a French movie, and it is just fabulous. But one of the things that they touted in the promotion of staying there was they had their own vans and their own drivers that take you into Marrakesh, as well as if you need private guides, etc. They had all those services. I thought, perfect. You know, rather than staying in the Medina and I'm not really comfortable or I don't know, you know, the whole thing, if I get outside in the most upscale suburb of Marrakesh, in this fabulous, which once was kind of a palace, Riyadh, and having that special transportation services at call, getting the private guides if you needed them to go through the Medina or anywhere else, I thought, that's how I'm going to do it. That's how I did it. Had, here again, one of the best trips I've ever taken. And many people, especially solo women travelers, would not consider going to Morocco. And I can totally understand. But I had no problem with either being not Muslim or from a Western country. But I also dressed conservatively. I did certain things that I didn't put myself out there that I could potentially be a target. So that is very, very important. So I think I've kind of covered, you know, dangerous versus not dangerous, and versus you got to always use common sense, basically.
One thing that's popping into my mind is lodging. We all have to sleep. How does the solo traveler feel safe where they are staying?
There are a lot of things about this. And this, I must say, is another one of the aspects of solo travel, especially for females, that they worry about. Oh, am I going to feel unsafe at night when I'm in my hotel room? Will I be able to sleep? Just all kinds of things you start thinking about things in your mind. And you have to just kind of, here again, think common sense. You know, think that, yes, there could be danger, but if you do certain things, I mean, you really reduce the danger factor. So these are some of the things that I do and I look for. Always stay in upscale hotels. Don't scrimp on the quality of the hotel. I always look for 5-star hotels that, you know, are in my price range. Maybe a 4-star boutique hotel. But when you stay in those types of hotels, they have the security procedures in place. Systems are built in, lots of technology. And, you know, that's one of my first things. You know, you stay in a well-rated hotel that you see in the reviews, that you read, and, you know, that's one of the number one things. Then also, with any kind of real estate, location, location, location. You want your hotel to be in a safe place, in a place where most of the things you want to do are within walking distance at, you know, if you can manage that. But most of the real good hotels are located in good areas and are around the things that people want to see and do. And if they get a little bit out of like the core area, there are a lot of great hotels that are just a little bit, but they'll be very close to mass transit stations. So like in London, for instance, oh, there are so many nice hotels all over London. And some of the most, I wouldn't say quaint, but some of the most charming.
Yeah.
Yeah. Aren't right on the main thoroughfares or whatever, but they're very close. Especially like in Mayfair. There's a particular hotel called the Chesterfield Mayfair. Oh, I just love that hotel. Well, it's within walking distance to the tube. So if I want to be out at night in London, which I am not uncomfortable in London being out at night, I won't be out at night probably past 9:30 or 10, but if I have to take the tube before that time, I'm not concerned about it. And if my walk from the tube station to my hotel is 5 minutes away, that's great. I mean, that, you know, so when you're booking your hotel, think about the location. If it's not exactly where you want, make sure if you're going to use mass transit, it's close to a transit station. Again, about hotels and the quality, five-star or great four-star hotels, the major chains. You know, Sofitel is great. Hilton, Marriott, they're always a safe bet. I mean, they are number one, besides you having a great experience there, is they do not want the reputation of being an unsafe lodging alternative. So they have a lot of safety things in place. They also now have a growing trend, and this is a future topic that I want to do a podcast on, what they, their solo-friendly hotels, or their hotels that are being geared to women travelers. And these hotels, they'll either have women-only floors, or all the staff personnel that we, the women travelers, solo women travelers deal with, all the staff are women. So whoever brings you your room service or who checks you in or does anything is a woman. They have 24/7 reception desks. So if you need anything, any kind of, you know, late night thing or whatever, you feel uncomfortable, there is somebody there. It's not like you're just alone. So I think that's kind of an interesting trend that certain hotels are starting to think about and do. And I think it's probably going to be a niche that will continue to grow. But two of the hotels, one is the Duke's Hotel in London. And another one is Richard Branson's Virgin Boutique Hotel in Chicago. Those, you know, those are some of the first safety things that you can think about as a solo woman traveler in terms of choosing a hotel. Now, there's some tips that I'd like to share about hotel safety in general and staying in a hotel and feeling comfortable. And, you know, your major threats are fire, attack, and some kind of disaster. That's the major threats in a hotel, because there's, you know, in most places, some kind of strange event happening to you in a hotel is less likely to happen, especially not from the hotel personnel, maybe from, you know, I don't know. But the fire, attack, and disaster is what you have to be prepared for if something all of a sudden happens, okay? Well, first of all, when you check in, ask to be placed on either the third through the sixth floor. Because, and all the safety experts say this, if there's a fire or if there's some kind of disruption at the hotel that you have to get out of, it's some kind of disaster taking place, the fire ladders, the trucks that have the ladders can go up to the sixth floor easily. And one person that I read about said, yeah, well, you know, you can survive jumping out of a window on the third floor. And I thought, oh, God, please.
I'm not, no. Yeah, let's not try that one.
but think not any higher than the sixth floor, but not the ground floor. The ground floor or the second floor, somebody, you know, could, if they wanted to get in, possibly they could use a shorter ladder or whatever, and they could access the room. So third through sixth floor. also rooms that face a courtyard versus the street are safer. The room should be not located real close to the lobby or any of the common areas. You know, ideally you go up the elevator and, you know, there's no common areas around. So you don't want to be in some hotels or up on the, you know, the guest floors or higher up now. But when you're close to the common areas, that's when maybe somebody who's not connected to the hotel or whatever.
We're avoiding wanderers.
Yeah, could follow you or something like that. When you book the room, just give your first name, initial, and last name. Try not to divulge your gender. That's a new thing that I've been reading, especially in this gender-neutral world that we're evolving into. Gender-neutral, basically, okay? Then, when checking in, make sure the check-in attendant doesn't say, well, Mrs. Clements, here's your room. You'll be staying in 402. No, they're never supposed to say the room number.
Like announce all your information.
Yeah, never. But I think they're all trained to not to do this. But make sure they just write down the room number. And they typically write it down on your little envelope where you have the plastic keys now and blah, blah, blah. Okay, you want a hotel that has elevator access only by guests. So you know the hotels that have the elevator access using your room key to get up, those are the best. And here again, in the big chain, Sofitel, Hilton, Marriott, five-star hotels, they all have that now, or they're all going to it because it's part of really being safe. Hallways to the room. You don't want to go down a hallway that is dark and especially too far away from the elevator. You want to be close to the elevator. That is one of the things that they always say. I think, well, why would I want it? But this is the safety experts say, close to the elevator, not a long walk down a hall. If the hall is not well lit, go back downstairs and just say, could you move me? I'm a little uncomfortable walking down the hall that is not. And in some of these brand new, beautiful hotels, some of the decor is very dark. It is very dark. So they say that. Then notice the exits. That's something I do everywhere. Everywhere I go, where is the exit? Because that's another thing. I'm always wondering, God, if something goes wrong, somebody gets all mad, and they're, you know, how am I going to get out of here? Rooms, definitely double locking locks. They, you know, especially now with the credit card, like key access. Ooh, that just always, every time that makes, but if you have the deadbolt, and then you have either the chain, which they don't use a chain anymore. Most of them have that funny little gizmo that you do. But as soon as you get in the room, lock it. Just, you know, have it. Make sure all the doors and the windows are locked, especially sliding glass doors, because sometimes they're not locked. When you're gone, I do this. Leave the do not disturb sign on your room and leave the TV on. I mean, you never know when somebody is going to get access into it while you're gone or whatever. They know you're solo or I don't know. But you always have to kind of think, well, I don't know if something goes wrong. But if you have do not disturb, that's just one more barrier. And what I usually do, because I really don't mess up my rooms too much, is after a couple of days, when I want them to come in and make the room up and change the towels, I'll call the desk and say, I'm going to breakfast. Would you get somebody to clean my room? And I'm going to be back in about an hour, hour and a half. And they always do it. And go back to your room, put the do not disturb on the TV. Then when you come back, you know, you're not going to be worried somebody's in your room. Or what's going to happen? Or has somebody been through my things or whatever? Another thing is get the hotel's business card. Now, I have always done this, basically, especially in countries where there's not a lot of English or whatever. But if you're in a taxi and you can't really describe where your hotel is, or if you're going somewhere and you don't like where this place is or something, you can just show the taxi driver your hotel card. They know where to go then. So always keep your hotel card in your wallet the whole time that you're away, okay? If there's something happens in the hotel, you're in your room and there's a fire going on or there's something and you can't get the desk or whatever, you can use your cell phone to call 911 and tell them all the statistics about the hotel or whatever. They say to have this hotel card to even with you in the room in case you need to call about
it. So you're not fumbling around trying to gather it. You got it there.
Yeah, and you can't think, okay? Let's see here. A couple of more things. Don't open the door to strangers. That's just total common sense. If you don't think like that, well, maybe solo travel.
That's beyond the scope of our podcast.
If you feel uncomfortable, say you've gone to the bar in the hotel, in a lot of the really nice hotels, and I know this is going to sound real strange, but one of the ways I decide or I determine whether a hotel is solo friendly is if a female can go into the bar and feel comfortable either on her computer, having a couple of glasses of wine, maybe, either reading or writing in her journal or just decompressing, looking at Facebook or texting or whatever. If she can feel comfortable in the bar or the lounge, and so many of these beautiful hotels, the bars and lounges are set up like dens or different types of things. You know, they're places that you will feel comfortable in. So if you feel, though, that after you've maybe had two glasses of wine or you feel a little bit like unsure, just ask the bar attendant to get somebody to escort you back to your room. So if you ever feel unsafe, whether you've been in the bar or not, to go to your room, just go either to the front desk or, get somebody in staff to walk you back to the room. That's a good thing to think. I saw a lady do that one time at Fisher Island. My husband and I had been there, and we were all in this beautiful lounge with this gentleman who was playing the piano, and it was one of those kind of magic nights. Everybody was having a good time, and we were all relaxed, and there were couples and groups, and here was this older lady, and she looked real refined, but she was there, and she'd been drinking or whatever, and I heard her go up to the one of the waiters and said, would you please escort me back to my room? And I thought that was just perfect, because she knew that she had been there a little too long and had a little bit too much to drink, and she wanted to make sure she got back to her room safely.
Good for her. I love that.
Yeah, so think like that. And another thing is make friends with the concierge. When you check in, once you unpack and everything, you go and share with the concierge that you're going to be there a couple of days. You're going to need some help with showing where it's safe to go to and where you shouldn't go to, lots of different things. So you get friendly with the concierge. They will help you, protect you, and tell you what you need to do and where you need, what you need not to do, and don't go, okay? I do one thing that is some people don't really even think about and might think is a little weird, but let me tell you something. I think, and it has come in handy before, I suggest this to everybody who asks me about, being safe in a hotel room. Every night when I go to bed, I put my purse right by the side of the bed, that if I get out of the bed, I can grab my purse. In my purse is my passport, my wallet that has my money and my credit cards, and the hotel
business card, right?
Okay. Then on the nightstand, I have a very small flashlight, and I have my iPhone, which is charging, and it's always on. I'll have some slippers or a pair of shoes right by my bed, and I'll either have a robe on the other side of the bed, because there's nobody with me in the bed, and or a coat, that if something would happen in the middle of the night, all I have to do is grab my purse, I know where my phone is, I have shoes and a coat or a robe or something. And let me tell you, I had a horrible experience that turned out fine in Guilin, China. I had been in China for 5 weeks, and at the very end of the tour, well, I had gone solo, but at the last 2 weeks, I had taken a river cruise down the Yangtze, and they also went to Guilin on the way to Hong Kong, which was our last stop. And Guilin is just a beautiful area. It's considered really one of the most beautiful areas of China as far as natural landscape. It has these, you know, the pointed mountains and all of these rivers and tributaries, and it's got a lot of flowers and just gorgeous gardens and bridges, and it really is beautiful. In fact, Bill Clinton, President Clinton, he had gone there, and he had commented that he thought this was one of the most beautiful places that he had seen. It really is beautiful. Well, last night before I was going to Hong Kong to catch my flight back, I had met a real nice lady on the tour, and I had really become friends with her, you know. And so she said, well, why don't you come have a glass of wine with me, and, you know, this is our last night before we leave. So I thought, okay, you know, so I went, and we stayed, and I stayed a little bit longer than I wanted to, but she was such a nice person. So I went back up. I had to wash my hair. I had to finish packing. So I finished packing, and I mean, my suitcase was ridiculously full, but I got it closed. I strapped it up, and I did it. So I jumped in the shower, washed my hair, and as I was getting out of the shower, the fire alarm went off. The hotel went dark. We were on, I think, the 13th floor. I mean, I don't know how, but my purse was by the bed. I knew my robe was behind the door. I found my purse that had my passport. I got the robe. I ran out of that room. I knew where the exits were because I always look for the exits. I ran down 13 floors of stairs, freezing cold, with my purse and all these people. We got down there. We were all outside. Within 5 minutes, the manager came out and said it was a false alarm.
Oh, my gosh.
But the bottom line is I knew where my purse was, and I knew where the robe was. Now, this wasn't, you know, totally in the middle of the night like I always do every night before I go to bed, but it's good to have that happen. And I've actually talked to another lady that said she had not a fire alarm, but something else similar. And she said, you know, Astrid, I do that same thing. And this is, and it really, it was, so do that simple little habit. The last thing I want to talk about is gadgets. Now, if you can't get over really being scared or feeling uncomfortable that maybe somebody can get in your room at night, there are some gadgets that you can use. First and foremost is just a rubber stopper wedge or some kind of wedge that you can put in the door.
The wrong way. So like, so
yes.
Wedge. So not to hold the door open, but to wedge it.
Yes.
Huh.
Yes.
I did not think of that.
Then, secondly, they are door alarms. And on my website, astrotravel.com, I have a little short video. It's about 10 seconds showing you this door alarm. It's a great little door alarm that you can hang on the door, and you put the two little prongs in between the door and the door jamb. If anybody opens it, it goes, wah! I mean, it makes a annoying noise. So if anybody does manage to, you know, get a card that will open your door and you forgot to lock it, Let me tell you something. That door alarm will sound. At least you'll wake up. They'll run away. So, you know, some people do take that. And I must say, when I went to China, I took that. Because I didn't know. I had no idea what China would be like. You know what I'm saying? So, and I only used it one night. And I really didn't need to use it. But for some reason, I felt like using it. Meh. But after that, you know, so 5 weeks, only used it one night. And I stayed in that same hotel for, oh, 6 nights. Then also they have now what's called a swedge, which is a door jam that also has a sound to it. So if somebody would try to open it or the door, it would start blaring out sound.
A combo of our previous two gadgets there, yeah.
Yes. And then there's one more gadget. This is, you know, getting even more safety-oriented. It's called the Travel Guard Alarm with PIR. Now, I've never seen one of these. But it has a motion detector as well as a personal alarm, LED flashlight. So if somebody even gets close to the window or the sliding glass door, or you can position it to where it's a motion detector, it goes off, alarm. So, you know, these are out there. So if you feel unsafe staying somewhere, think about this.
Well, and it's funny because we're laughing a little bit at some of the extent of these gadgets, but if they make you feel, they give you that confidence, if they make you feel a little bit more secure that you're able to enjoy yourself, then who cares? Then it's worth it.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so that's basically my tips on hotel safety.
We're going to leave it here for now. In the next episode of Solo Travel Talk, Astrid will continue giving you lots of tips and tactics for being safe as a solo traveler. Safety is a top concern. But did you know that packing is the second most common thing that Astrid hears about? That's why Astrid has an amazing packing list. If you go to her website, astridtravel.com, right there on the homepage is a place you can download her amazing packing list. Get the packing list and don't let that be a source of stress when you go solo. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, and really find it any of the finer places that podcasts can be found. We invite you to rate us, review us, and if you like what you're hearing, share it with a friend. Thank you so much for listening. We look forward to seeing you next week with Safety Part 2 on Solo Travel Talk. Take care, everyone. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Solo Travel Talk. Follow Astrid on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. To learn more about Astrid or solo travel advisors, visit our website, astridtravel.com.